This is Lock and Loaded with Rick Munn on TNT.
Ah, yes, it's good to be alive and it's good to be saved. Yes, I'm a Christian and I have to act like it. And yeah, it can be problematic sometimes, but that's life. It's Friday, the 26th of April, 2024. What an absolute blinder of a show we've had so far. Great to talk to Gemma in the last hour, Phil Zimmerman, and also, of course, Basil Valentine. Coming up in this hour, still plenty more on the table. Gemma's going to be joining me again in just a minute. Then Jack Brooks is going to be hopping on. He's a Reform Party candidate from Birmingham, Erdington constituency. And of course, Reform have been in the news recently for good and bad reasons. Apparently, they're surging ahead in the polls. They look like they could be giving the Tories a very hard time. But on the flip side, a lot of scandal has been attached to the party as well, and certainly question marks hanging over their leader, Richard Tice. So I'm going to be getting Jack's opinions, thoughts and views on where he stands in the grand scheme of things at around about 20 past the hour. And then finally, to round off the day, Rob Hutchinson will be joining me from South Africa talking about some of the issues that are currently happening down there, because it's important to keep an eye on what's going on all over the world rather than just on our own back doors. So what's happening in Ireland at the minute? Well, this woman, this menace, is never too far away from the headlines. Helen McEntee, again, I hate, I'm going to maybe try and know a better color by her actual name. Helen McEntee said, apparently less than 100 people have been deported out of 7,300 people that have been refused refugee status in Ireland since the beginning of 2023. So that's about 15, 16 odd months, almost 17 months now. So 7,300 people refused refugee status, should have been deported, and less than 100 of them have actually been booted out of the country. Do the mathematics. So out of 7,300 people that should not be here, 7,200 approximately are still here. This is a year and a bit later. This is the kind of person that we have acting as a justice minister. And something she said was, McEntee said that the vast majority of Irish people, and that's in air quotes, would not like Ireland to have a Denmark-style asylum system because they detain people the same way as you would in prison. And again, here we have this woman making stuff up, no evidence behind what she said, no factual evidence to say that the majority of people would not want Ireland to adopt a Denmark-style detaining process. Where does she get those figures from? Where does she get that from? She just makes these things up off the top of her head and throws them out there as if they're actual facts. The same way she said the majority of Irish people wanted the word mother removed from the constitution and the word family removed from the constitution, and the Irish government got their nose bloodied at the last two referenda that happened about a month or two ago concerning constitutional change. So you can take whatever she says with a pinch of salt. Another story here, just interestingly, American debt. The federal government in America has added $11 trillion, $11,000 billion of debt in the last 4 years. That's approximately $84,000 of debt for every household in the country. Now, listen to this. If you weren't already aware of this, to put it into perspective, it took 220 years from 1789 until 2009 for the debt to reach $11 trillion. So 220 years to reach the first $11 trillion, and Biden / Trump, whoever, has printed another $11 trillion in the last 4 years. So if you look at a curve of spike and the amount of debt that America's in at the minute, in the last 4 years, it's racked up the same amount of debt as the previous 220 years combined. So that can only head one way, which is to a complete economic meltdown in America. It's not a case of if it's going to happen. It's a case of when. So on that happy note, going to take a pause, bring Jem in, and see what's on the table to discuss in terms of breaking news here on TNT, today's news talk.
Going 360 on the headlines.
It's really well-balanced conversation.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Jem, in the last hour, we talked about this business, Newton Mount Kennedy, that's going on in Ireland. The place is up in flames last night. Garda were out pepper spraying, beating people away. Yesterday, I don't know if you saw the footage, but there were balaclava donning people standing in these direct provision centres, guarded by the police from the local residents, just standing there with their arms folded, staring down the local residents. Absolutely bizarre scenes here, which of course has led to tension and led to the spilling over into a little bit of violence and public unrest last night. There's a story here. I'll just share it with you. This is, again, from GRIP, to do with another place that they're trying to push a direct provision centre into. And this is just to give you a flavour of the reaction to this here. Let me see. I don't want to take a survey. A public meeting organised by councillors Gerry O'Neill and John Snell was held in County Wicklow yesterday to address local concerns about the placement of three more asylum centres. The packed meeting took place in the community centre in a rural village with 200 people in attendance. Does that not give you a flavour in terms of proportionality here? A little village in rural Ireland packed to the rafters with 200 concerned local people saying, what the hell are you doing in our community? We don't want three more direct provision centres in our area. We can't do this. Does that not give you an idea what the...
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Just that's really pretty much the whole community turning out, isn't it? That 200 people, percentage-wise, is that's going to be everybody. And also these small rural communities, again, what we were talking about, these places that aren't geared up for anybody, you know, even like normal tourism. There's no infrastructure there at all. No support systems. We already know about the shortage of rural GPs in Ireland. We've covered that story many times. So why, you know, very strategic placing of these centres, isn't it? It's almost like you're like, where can we cause the maximum unrest, the maximum disruption, the maximum stress to locals right there? Right, we'll put them there then. You know, it's very, very orchestrated, not just in Ireland, as we say, but around other places, Wales as well. Wales in very rural working class areas in South Wales, putting people in hotels and also RAF bases, which are traditionally away from urban conurbations because of flights. They're in quite rural, poor places too. And there are other places that are earmarked in the UK for detention centres, all of which face widespread opposition, all of which haven't been listened to. It's just so much out of the playbook. It's unreal.
Yeah, and here's the thing. One of these venues or one of these buildings, Gemma, is a former nursing home by the name of Crooksling. Okay, so locals express frustration that the Crooksling site, which was previously used to care for the sick and the elderly, and was gifted by the state to the people for that purpose, was now being proposed to house male asylum seekers. So we hear about the lack of beds in hospitals. We hear about the lack of care for the elderly. We hear about rural communities being overlooked. Is this not salt in the wounds here that this particular site, Crooksling in County Wicklow, was used to care for the sick and elderly, had been gifted to the state to the people for that purpose, but is now being repurposed to house male asylum seekers?
Yeah, it is. It's quite what you say, rubbing salt into the wounds, you know, changing the cultural landscape of a community, changing the feel of what the utilities were used for. That's what this is. So much of this is about that as well, with mass migration, changing the face of communities, cultures that go back hundreds of years or generations, so that you've got a connection to the buildings that where you are. You've got history with them, completely being repurposed without permission. Changes not just the infrastructure, but your psyche. It changes something in your psyche. It severs that connection with who you are and your community. It's very deep. This goes very deep. The whole issue of global mass migration, immigration, it's very, very pernicious agenda.
It's also just to put a full stop in this one, Gemma, as well. That site, residential site for the elderly and the infirm and the ill, was up to 200 residents were in there at one point, including people suffering from dementia, and obviously advanced illness, elderly people. So a lot of people were catered for in that particular site. It wasn't just a small community site with, you know, capacity for 10 people. 200 people at one point were being cared for in that place. But of course, that's not on the table anymore. It's now being potentially going to be repurposed to house men, and I just can't get my head around that at all, how that they're actually putting that forward as a proposition. And also of note, a lot of local councillors didn't attend that meeting. Many residents did, two local councillors arranged it, but a lot of them were conspicuous in their absence, which I think also speaks volumes.
It does indeed. And just very quickly, just to go back to the story this relates to, which is that the all of the things that went on at Newton Mount Kennedy last night, I just had a quick look on X, which is you can get a taster, you know, I wouldn't ever call it the authority, but you get a taster of where the mood is going. And so many comparisons, because so many citizen journalists now, thank goodness, of what really happened and the way the mainstream is reporting it in Ireland, the gulf could not be wider. And the mainstream media, I think, has to be very, very careful in the Republic now of what it's doing, because obviously people are never, ever going to go back to just blindly accepting official versions of events ever again post-2020, and are taking matters into their own hands. And I think not only is it the government, it's the media now that should be very much examining its own motives. And if you're in the mainstream media and still working, do your job properly. Do your job properly. That's all I'll say. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, do your job properly or else we'll send them out to get you. Won't say who them is. But anyway, with another few minutes left, other breaking headlines of this morning. Gemma, what are you going to throw at us before you depart locked and loaded for the final time this week?
Well, it's Humza Yousaf. So he's flip-flopping around all over the place since we last spoke. He cancelled a speech in Glasgow today where he was supposed to give a speech on Scottish independence. And everyone thought it's because he was running scared. He's now announced he's going to be doing a speech in Dundee later on, where he's expected to take to the stage and explain his actions of the last 24 hours and say, you know, I stand by what I did and I'm not resigning. I think that's been made quite clear. Many outlets saying he does not expect to resign, despite the no confidence vote called by the Scottish Conservatives yesterday, and despite the Scottish Labour Party, who are now being backed by the UK London Labour Party, saying they're going to table a motion later today of a vote of no confidence in the entire Scottish government, which is now only SNP, following their breakup with the Greens yesterday. So it's quite an extraordinary, fast-moving story. And I did rather think when he cancelled his speech in Glasgow that if he had the courage of his convictions, he would have strutted onto the stage and said, yeah, I stand by what I did. I don't want to work with the Greens anymore. I'm the First Minister. I'm in charge. You know, if I was a politician, that's what I'd do. So that looks like what he will be doing on stage in Dundee later, is saying, explaining his actions, explaining how government will work moving forward, and saying, I'm not stepping down. And like, love it or shove it, like it or lump it, which is what some would say a politician's job is. If you haven't got the courage of your convictions, don't go into it. So it's fast moving. We don't know how this is going to work out. The Scottish Labour Party, I don't think, have the real power to destabilise the entire Scottish government. Labour are saying it's absolutely the right thing. Well, they would, wouldn't they? They want to get the SNP out. Rachel Reeves from the Labour Party in the UK has said it's the right thing to do. Get rid of all the SNP government and start from scratch. I mean, we are in an election year. We might be facing a Scottish election as well. And of course, Humza Yousaf himself, if I'm not mistaken, he wasn't elected to that role, but he's showing no signs today of going anywhere by the looks of it.
Yeah, that's the thing, isn't it? They hang on and they hang on, and you think they're not going anywhere until they go really quick. Look at Nicola Sturgeon. Who ever thought she was ever going to quit? But away she went. Leo Varadkar was another one. Jacinda Ardern. All these people, all of a sudden they're there, and then they're not there anymore. So Humza, I'm not a betting man, personally speaking, but I would, if I was, I would wager, I would bet the house he's not going to be around for too much longer. A little bit like Nicola Sturgeon, the writing was on the wall for her. It was only a matter of when and not if she was finally removed herself from that position. So Humza, we're watching. It's Humza. Yeah, I was calling him Yousaf. All right, I got his name wrong. Anyway, I'm not even going to try and say it because I'm starting to clam up a bit here. But you know who I'm talking about. Let's see if he's around next week, okay? By next Friday, I'm saying he's not going to be here. So let's see if that one comes true or not. So thank you so much, Gemma, for all your input this week. As always, it's been a complete blast talking to you and working with you. And hopefully we get to do it all again next week, starting on Monday again. Yeah, it never ends here in TNT. And we'll be back after this short ad break with Jack Brooks. So don't go away. There's more incoming here on TNT, Today's News Talk.
TNT's David Curtin.
Rishi Sunak is being threatening that he will do this and saying, oh, we'll do this, we'll come out of the ECHR, that is, not anything else. But he hasn't done so. And then he's saying, well, if we're elected, in the general election this year, which is highly unlikely, then we may come out and we may give notice to come out if we're re-elected in 2024-2025. By that time, another year or 2 years will have passed, and another 100,000 or so military-aged men will have crossed the channel in small boats with not a single flight taking off to take some bogus asylum seekers to Rwanda.
David Curtin on today's News Talk, TNT. A better business tip from TNT Radio. One reason people tune in to TNT Radio is often because they're loyal to a specific show or personality. Our personalities have been a part of people's daily routine, and people continue to tune in. They trust TNT Radio and are highly engaged with the content. If you'd like more information about advertising on TNT Radio, simply fill out your details on our contact page and we'll be in touch. To find out more, go to tntradio.live.
You are about to hear
today's news talk and the voice of freedom.
That's what this country is all about.
TNT Radio.
Yes, welcome back to the show. This is Locked and Loaded. It's Friday the 26th of April, 2024. We're locked, we're loaded, we're beaming at you live from an undisclosed location in the Gold Coast in Australia, but we're live and global, heading out all over the world, and I'm happy to be joined this morning for the first time on TNT, or at least on Locked and Loaded anyway, by Jack Brooks. And Jack is a Reform Party candidate running for the Birmingham Erdingen constituency. And he's on here this morning to talk a little about what he's about and a little bit about what Reform's about and how he fits into the general scheme of things. So welcome to the show this morning, Jack. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm not too bad. It's just gone the afternoon in the UK.
Good morning, afternoon. It's always morning for me. I'm on a funny time clock. My shift keeps changing. So yeah, you're right. It's 20 past 12. Normally I would have started at 10 o'clock for a long time and finished it at 12, but now it's 11 to 1. But yes, you're right. It's the afternoon now, not the morning. So thank you for correcting me on that one. Listen, Reform, before you came on there, I was, we were discussing various stories, and depending on which way you look at this one, Reform are looking like a viable alternative to the Tory party at the minute, certainly making great gains in the polls. But a lot of people, of course, like with any political party, are saying, well, I like this bit, but I don't like that bit. I like this candidate, but I don't like the leadership, one thing and another. How did you end up in Reform, and how long have you been attached to the Reform party for?
Well, as I said before, for my many sins, I used to be in the Tory party, but having lived in Northern Ireland, I can tell you it's not a unionist party, and that's called Conservative and Unionist. So I was in there when I was about 17 years old. Then I left in early 2021, joined Reform UK because it had previously been the Brexit party. I'd become quite disillusioned with the Conservative Party. It is not a party based off merit, and what Reform was standing for was more appealing to me. And not only this, it was the change that we needed for a long time in British politics. And we're not just the alternative to the Conservative Party. We are the only alternative to every single party. We are something completely different. And as with every party, you're not going to 100% agree. Like, there are things that Richard says that I fully disagree with, like his stance on the war in Ukraine, whereas Ben, he's against the war in Ukraine as well. So it's not just one person. Like, the party is bigger than Richard Tice. Richard has done a terrific job with it, but it is about more than just him. Like, we've got Elaine Williams, who's a fantastic candidate and a good friend of mine, running for the West Midlands mayor. And she is one of the most genuine, sincere people that I know. And the person that's helping running her campaign is one of only two people I've ever trusted in my life. So just from a personal standpoint, these are the kind of people that we've got.
Right. I want to pick up on that because that's a very good point that you make here. Okay. Because I was reading through your website last night, looking at all the policies, looking at recent news headlines, many of which we've covered here in TNT. And some chap, you've reposted this on your Twitter page, Darren Selkis, Reform UK, made a comment, which I thought was good. He said, Reform UK isn't Richard Tice. It isn't Nigel Farage or a handful of spokespeople you see on TV or social media. Reform UK is hundreds of prospective parliamentary candidates, thousands of activists, and millions of supporters. We are growing and change is coming. To which you replied, yes, we are. Each one of us is a story. Each one of us wants to be free for the country to go in a positive direction. So That's a good statement. I like that statement that you made. The way that I'm seeing it is, Jack, and maybe other people will see this too, is although that statement says reform isn't Richard Dice, it isn't Nigel Farage, they're very much, how would you say, figureheads of the party. So people tend to go to that level when they look at a party in general, how it's run. They tend to look towards the leadership of the high-profile members rather than people that aren't in that position of profile. And for example, would look at Tice recently and say, well, you know what, he wants to, he's on a mission to Ukraine. He's delivering aid to Ukraine. He's talking about supporting Ukraine when in the UK, the NHS waiting lists are what, 7-8 million people. The country's going down the toilet, going to hell on a handcart pretty quickly. Should his priorities not be elsewhere? Do you see that people would look at the party and, for example, look to him in the first instance?
I do completely understand that. And I don't say what I'm about to say with any form of in meaning to be condescending. Yeah. But people look at politics in too much of a simplistic way. They have done for a long time. And it's like with the financial system, all you have to do is just scratch the surface. They like to use lots of complicated terms, just like with politics. So you only think that they know what they're on about, and then you don't go deeper, and then actually look at the whole bigger picture. They get you to focus like this instead of going like that and see it more widely. With Richard, I've not been a fan of his stance on the war in Ukraine, to reiterate again, but he's an individual who tells his own opinion. Nigel Farage, I think he has his positives and he has his negatives, like with everybody, but I do completely understand where the public are coming from, but it's also how the information's presented, how politics is presented. So I do understand that completely.
You see, the thing is, too, I mean, like I said, recently, this is a current affairs news program. So just this morning alone, there was a statement that Ben Habib had made to do with Channel Crossings. He said that if people refuse a certain type of aid, you know, border force of the Royal Navy should let people just drown in the channel. So some people are very upset about that statement. But then again, they're also upset that the RNLI and border force in the Royal Navy are actually ferrying people, facilitating them coming across the channel. Is it fair to say, and I agree with what you said to the extent that, you know, nothing's just black and white anymore. For example, if I don't like Reform Party, I simply won't vote for them. You know, and if somebody asks me, I'm just saying, because obviously I can't vote in the elections that you guys are having, but what I'm saying is, just hypothetically speaking, if somebody asked me, are you voting Reform? And if I didn't like your policies or I didn't like what you stood for, I would say, no, I'm not. I'm going to vote for somebody else, or I have no faith in elections whatsoever. I'm not going to vote for anybody at all. Is it not just down to people to make their choices on this one and then move accordingly on it rather than just sitting in an echo chamber? And that's why I wanted to have you on here this morning too. We tend to have a lot of independent candidates on. You know, it's the first time I've spoke to somebody from Reform, so I'm happy to give you time, and I'm happy that you've given me your time this morning just to see what you're about and let people come to their own conclusions.
I would say be the change you want to see in the world. Like, for me, I'm not happy with how the politics is going. I don't have much faith in it. People would say to me, then why do you want to be in it? Well, you can tear things down from the inside, and you've got to go by every single means you can and play every single game you can. But if the game becomes that rigged, I think the best thing to do, and it's like the same in America, go and form separate systems, go your own separate ways and go in peace. Like, they can't make you. Like, they tried to make us take a vaccine. I said no, I was not taking that experiment. And then Japan has proven it's led to excess increase in cancer and death beyond doubt now. And anyone who says otherwise is in such denial and is incredibly, incredibly stupid, because you can't outrun this. So the best thing we could do right now that would also end the war in Palestine and Israel is for 10% of everyone to withdraw their money, go and get some gold, go to the farmers and say, look, you've got private land, you've got the means to defend your land as well, and let's go and form a bank. Instead of trying to reform them and the establishment systems and their disgusting usury, fiat currency, money printing, and fractional reserve banking, let's go and form something better. And if they say no, then we'll go, okay, try and stop us. What are you going to do? It's like Rishi Sunak. He is tiny. He is weak. He is pathetic. Could he impose his political will physically on anybody? No, he needs someone bigger. He needs minions. Stalin had it with, like, his gulags, and with you had the Stasi. Then you had in, like, East Germany, you had those guys. Hitler had the SS and the SA. They always need henchmen. the politicians themselves are so pathetically weak. Like, Johnson is such a sick, little, shriveled, hunched over, pudgy, decadent, elitist, not even a bloke. Like, I don't know how he's had that many kids. I don't see what his appeal is. I've got to keep my language very restrained here.
Yeah.
But if people aren't happy with the political system, and rightfully so, go and form better systems. Like, one of the things I recommend is growing your own food. It's something I've wanted to do for a long time. I'm going to do my utmost best this summer to go and do it. One of the best things you can do in terms of your diet is eat as much beef and eggs as you can. Mm-hmm. Cut out grain. They are killing us with the food. Eddie Abiu, I'm so glad that he has risen to prominence in the social media platform, because he's speaking the truth. I can speak from experience in how I became very desirable in my final years of uni, just from lifestyle changes and lifting weights and eggs. And you are a lot more happier and confident when you lift weights, exercise, get plenty of sun, eat eggs, and eat beef.
Yeah, keep healthy as much as possible. Keep the body and the mind healthy. Jack, we've got to take a little headline break just right now. I want to read some of the comments out. Of course, there's a lot of people listening in at the minute and have their thoughts and opinions on what we're talking about now. I'll give you a chance to address some of those comments when we come back at the other side of the news. Just 30 seconds from now on TNT, Today's News Talk.
Here we go again.
All right, let's go.
TNT Radio News.
Matt Boyland here with a look at your TNT headlines. Israel has been accused of carrying out field executions in Gaza following the discovery of multiple mass graves in the Palestinian territory. It's been revealed the US is considering turning unused oil rigs in the Pacific Ocean into floating military bases that would be used to fire missiles and resupply US warships. And Moscow has warned it would downgrade relations with Washington if the US confiscates frozen Russian assets.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. For the news and views silenced by the mainstream media, by government and corporations, vote one. TNT Radio. Free speech always has a home here. Stay up to date with the latest live news and current affairs delivered by our lineup of expert commentators and hosts. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio, or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's News Talk. This is TNT Radio.
Yes, talking live this morning with Jack Brooks, Reform Party candidate for Birmingham Erdingham constituency. Jack, I don't have time to go through all the comments because there's something else I want to talk to you about Birmingham. But here's one in particular. So Danny in the live chat says, Reform support prolonging war in Ukraine, Israel genocide, the scandemic. Somebody else says, agreed. Again, we don't have time to go into all those points. But from my reading yesterday or last night, they don't have a definitive stance on either supporting or not supporting the Ukraine conflict. That's why I was making the point about Tice. Tice is very much obviously on board with it. But you said that there are things that within the party people disagree with the leadership on. Is there a direct party line on this? You can tell me this yourself. Is there a direct party line on this, or are candidates free to come to their own conclusions whether or not they support, for example, the conflict in Ukraine or not?
Candidates are free to come to their own conclusions, but I will say Tice is in the 10% of the party. 90% of the party doesn't want to be involved in this, in Ukraine, nor Israel, Palestine. We are very non-interventionist. As I mentioned before, there is a document that veterans wrote explaining why the war in Ukraine is basically a load of bull, and it's a money laundering exercise, and it's just wrong. So Tice really is pretty much out on his own. Ben Habib doesn't support the war. The only foreign conflict I would support, because it's in my nation's interest, and also having been there and experienced the country, is Taiwan. Because if the CCP take that country, they will have dominance over all the weapons with the microchips, so we can't allow that to happen, just from a UK standpoint. Israel-Palestine, there's always going to be issues in the Middle East. There is no reason for us to get involved. My opinion on why that war started is because Muslims and Christians across the world were coming together against all the wokeism, so they needed a way of dividing the Christians and the Muslims. I genuinely believe that's why it happened. And also, this isn't conspiracy. A Labour Party candidate got cancelled for saying this, but I'm going to come out and say something similar. The IDF knew they was going to get Hamas was going to attack. Why did they do nothing about it?
Yeah.
And their retaliation has been diabolical. there is defending your country, but then they've gone way too far. And it's just wrong. But there's too many people using political pawns for this. But the only way they finance these wars is by printing money. So if you withdraw 10% of your money from a bank, that bank fails, the financial system collapses, they can't keep financing the war. Simple as that. But you don't see anyone in the movements advocating this. But it is that simple. This financial system we have is wrong in Islam. It's wrong in Christianity. It's also wrong in Judaism. But you've got no one advocating, you know what, let's withdraw our money and start financing these wars through money printing and fractional reserve banking.
Yeah, I like your openness and your frankness with this here. And it puts some things to rest, in effect, because again, you hear this party stands for that, this party stands for that, without actually doing any research into it. And that's what I was doing and trying to do a little bit more of last night before I actually talked to you. And then that's why I asked you the question, what's the official line in Ukraine, for example? So many people perceive the Reform Party to be universally behind the conflict in Ukraine or supporting Israel, but it's not the case. And you've said
the majority don't support it. No, I can speak on behalf of the candidates, the grassroots, the youngsters in the party. The majority of this party does not support any side in the war in Israel-Palestine and does not want to be involved with the war with Ukraine. No.
Well, there you have it, listeners. And Robert Howell has put a message on there, and this is just a little bit tongue-in-cheek. He said, I think this candidate, referring to you, could be soon delisted by Tyson. Would hope not, because he's just saying that there is no official line on this one, and you don't have to agree with the leader on every issue. You're free to come to your own conclusions and take your own positions. And from what you've said there, Jack, that the majority of young candidates in particular would not be behind some of the issues that the leader is very much behind himself.
If I was to be delisted for what I've just said, a lot of people would leave. I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but there was a meeting last year that not only unified the party, but got the party in the trajectory that it's gone on since. And that would not have happened if I hadn't instigated this meeting and seen how Ben Habib could have been the unifying factor with the grassroots and the leadership.
Well, you know,
so if this is the hill I have to die on, that's fine.
You know, fair play to you, because, you know, when you came on here today, I tried to, Basil arranged you coming on, which was great. And I said, look, want to try and talk about the nuts and bolts issues, the things that are causing people concern, some of the perceptions around Reform Party. And like I said, at the end of all of this, people are free to make up their own decisions, whether or not they vote for you in particular or not, or they back the Reform Party or not. But at least you're speaking openly. You're speaking freely. I'm not putting any restrictions on what you can say. And obviously, you don't feel bound by any company lines or party lines here, because you're just speaking your mind freely. And I think that's what it should all be about. You should be free to express how you feel and how you go forward as a candidate, rather than just simply towing a party line.
I also want to be clear that I will always respect Richard, because he gave me a chance. He's given many people a chance in his party, and he's always willing to change his mind when presented new information. So I would give Richard a bit of leeway. Because he deserves that, absolutely. He's not like the other politicians. That's very easy for me to say. But I've known Richard for a number of years now, and I think he's very genuine and sincere. And if he's been misinformed, then you have to take what he says with a pinch of salt. But we are a party that's forever evolving, though. We are.
Yeah, and that's fair play for you to say that, because obviously I don't know anything about, all I know about the guy is what I've seen him say and what I've seen him come out with, a lot of which I absolutely have no time for whatsoever. You know, the support for the injections and, you know, he was against lockdowns, but pro jabbing and mandates and all that sort of business. I've no time for that at all, but I don't know the guy. And
he has recently come out and said there needs to be a vaccine inquiry into the damages. So he has been presented new information, has gone, okay, hang on a second, we was lied to, let's look at it. So I hope now he will look at the Japanese information, because that's proved beyond doubt it is killing people, 100%.
Well, again, I wish we had a little bit longer to talk here, Jack, but we can't because we're out of time. Is there a good place to hook up with you? I'm just having a look here on social media. You do have a Twitter page, Jack for Erdington on X or Twitter. But do you have a website, or is there a good place to go if people can get more information on you as a candidate as opposed to the Reform Party in general?
You can go on the Reform Party's website and you can look at Find My PPC. And then if you go to the West Midlands section and you go to Birmingham, you'll find Birmingham Erdington. and all my social media and what I'm about is all there. Everything you need to know about me is there.
Okay, we'll do that then. If you can, people, or if you're interested, especially if you're listening in from Birmingham and some of, at least some of what Jack has said here this morning has resonated with you, go and check it out. And if nothing has resonated with you, if you don't like the thought of it or you've been turned off from Reform this morning, well, simply don't vote for them. Go and vote for somebody else or don't vote for anybody at all. But at least the platform's there for you to be able to say your piece here. And we don't want this to be just an echo chamber where we have people on that we just, you know, unquestioningly agree with all the time. We need to hear from all the people straight from the horse's mouth. So thank you very much, Jack, for taking the time out to join us here this morning. I do appreciate it. We'll stay in touch, and I hope you have a great weekend, whatever you're planning to do. We've got to take a break now, and then welcome Rob Hutchinson's on from South Africa. So don't go away. There's still more to come here on TNT Today's News Talk.
Sometimes a car comes along that changes everything. With innovations never thought possible and features that make you wonder, how did people survive without this? This is that time, and this is that car. This is the world's first VWB. Equipped with transparent doors to eliminate reasonable suspicion, whatever that means. A 10-2 steering wheel that keeps hands visible at all times. We remove the glove box so there's no confusion about what the driver is reaching for. With a touch of a button, the ultrasonic biometric scanner displays the license and registration of the driver to ensure contactless exchange of information. With no trunk, nothing can be concealed, so therefore, there is nothing to search and seize. To ensure you'll never be mistaken for breaking the speed limit, we've installed limited edition airless tires. And we removed the engine because, honestly, why risk it? DWB, the first vehicle of its kind, where the safety feature is the car itself.
Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome. Prediabetes does. One in three adults has prediabetes, but with early diagnosis, prediabetes can be reversed. And you can change the outcome. Take the 1 minute prediabetes risk test today. Go to doihaveprediabetes.org.
Rick Mon is locked and loaded on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Oh, my Lord, my Lord. Rob Hutchinson is in the house. Finally, he's joining us from South Africa. He's been meandering here. He's been meandering there. And finally, he's managed to hop on and join us on Locked and Loaded. Rob, how are you doing this beautiful Friday in April? Oh,
fantastic. Fantastic. Very well in yourself, Rick. It's a bit cold here, I must say. It's a bit of a
cold
class day, but
define cold. Define cold.
cold in South Africa. What's it, about 18 degrees Celsius?
That's tropical. That's tropical weather where I come from. I don't think we hit 18 degrees Celsius maybe more than 3 or 4 days a year, Rob. For us, 18 is positively tropical. People will be on the beach and oiling themselves up and trying to catch a little bit of sunshine. For us, we would take 18 in a heartbeat. You know what, mate? I'll be honest with you. It's been a mad old week. Covering so many crazy topics. And just before you came on there, a young lad joined us from a party in the UK, the Reform Party, a very polarizing party. People think they could be the next big thing. Other people think they're just controlled opposition and they're going to run us all into the ground. I know you, for a time anyway, told me that you dabbled in politics for a while. Would you ever go back into that cesspit again, having successfully scrambled out of it and washed the muck out of your pores? Would you ever venture back into politics? Or are you leaving well alone?
Not a chance. I've been asked often if I would join it either as an independent or with another party, but no, I don't think so. It's just it's too bureaucratic, things move too slowly, it's not for the people, you lose touch with reality, and you can get nothing done. And it's the most unrewarding profession I think anyone could ever have, unless you're more self-oriented than outward focused, then perhaps it is for you, but it's not for the people, you lose touch. And you know, the reason I jumped out of it was because I could get nothing done. It was, you hit a brick wall wherever you go, and you're fighting with the person sitting next to you. It's really not worth the effort at all. Civil society, there's no boundaries, there's no rules, there's no bureaucracy. You can act quickly. You can do what you want within the limits of the law, and it's far more effective.
I was going to say there, when you made that statement, it's not a very rewarding business to get into. I was going to say, well, unless you're a self-serving parasite, in which it can be a very rewarding business indeed. But I know, well, you don't strike me as a self-serving parasite. So maybe that's why politics is not for you. You hit that brick wall and you hit that red tape and you're having no more of it. So what you did do was, for people that don't know, you turned your attention to different things, one of which in particular was the establishment of a website or a public participation platform called Dear South Africa. And you can check them out, dearsouthafrica.co.za. That has been a real hub for the people of South Africa. Certainly you guys have managed to effect change, or certainly stall bad things being brought into South Africa there. Is that a more viable way to spend your time? Of course, I know what the answer to this was going to be, but should more people not get involved with these public participation, mass get together, mass jamming of the system type things, rather than following, you know, traditional political lines and hoping and voting for another candidate? Because usually they're uni parties and various countries, you know, in Britain, you've got Labour and the Conservatives. They're two cheeks of the same ass. It's pretty much the same with the Democrats and the Republicans in America. And I know, you know, South Africa is not that much different. Is the public participation thing the way forward for in general?
Definitely. Without a doubt, Rick. It's, I remember sitting in a meeting recently, and it was all about the public participation and getting people involved in the democracy. It's not about just having your putting your mark on a piece of paper once every 2.5 or 5 years. It's far more than that. It's a participatory democracy where the people get involved, have their say, influence politicians, influence their, I was going to say leaders, but we seem to call them leaders when they're not really. They're public servants. And in a democracy, they're here to serve us. And therefore, we have to actually tell them what to do. Public participation is all about that. It's having your say on the many decisions that government undertakes. It's getting involved in the drafting of laws or the amendment of laws, and influencing policy, because policy does obviously affect everything that we do and manages and governs the way the country operates. So if we don't get involved and have our say as citizens, then we're sort of agreeing with whatever the politicians put out. And creates a very dangerous situation, as we've seen around the world. If you don't get involved in your democracy or participate in those things, you're doing nothing but destroying the democracy, because you know, humans are humans, and if they're placed in a position of unfathomable power and unlimited resources, it's only natural that people will gravitate towards a totalitarian sort of authoritarian approach. And therefore, we as citizens have to keep that in check. And the only way to do that is to be actively participating.
You know, we have been talking, you and I have been talking now for about 2 years, and we've been tracking the trajectory that South Africa in particular has been on. And it's not, It's not, let's be honest about it. Forget about being pessimists or doom merchants. We're realists here. You know, we look at what's happening and we're simply commentating on it. In Ireland, for example, at the minute, there's the problems we have here with mass immigration, illegals coming into the country, men being shipped into villages and infrastructure being ruined, local people being beaten back by the police, pepper sprayed. We see that last night, places being set on fire. Everyone has a breaking point. Okay. Everyone has a breaking point. And I know you guys are struggling with that issue as well. But the one thing that we always end up talking about is electricity. Okay. Which is very, very important because, yeah, you know, you do tend to need it to keep functioning as a society. And there was a piece there that you put up or a headline that you put up just yesterday on the Dear South Africa site, a massive 550 rand prepaid electricity charge for Joburg. City Power explains. So basically, the city of Joburg Power Utility, City Power, has refuted claims by the Democratic Alliance that it would be charging prepaid electricity users 554 rand a month on top of an 18.84% increase in electricity tariffs from July this year. So not only is the service intermittent at best, it's intermittent with the old rolling, we actually, you call it load shedding, we call it rolling blackouts. But now there's talk of a flat fee every month on top of an 18.8% increase for a service that's crap at best. So there's surely only so much tolerance for that the people in the Joburg area will stick up with, surely.
Yeah, well, we hope so. City Power did clarify it, but it was one of those typical government sort of skirt around the issue and, you know, blur the lines between what's the truth and what's not. There is a significant increase. I think we're going to see it across all municipalities, simply because people are moving off the grid, cutting down on the electricity usage. Taking matters into their own hands. So the municipalities have to bring in some sort of tariff or extra charge or something else to compensate for the financial losses that they are facing. Most of their revenue is generated from electricity, and they're just on a downward spiral. What they have to do is actually rethink the whole financial model of municipalities. Focus on other issues, because right now adding more tariffs on for less and less service, as you say, all it's going to do is drive people further and further away, and it's going to cause that death spiral that will naturally occur in such circumstances. So yeah, it's across the board. I think all the municipalities are currently undergoing the restructuring of their tariffs. It's their budget time, so they're all increasing tariffs across the board: water, electricity, refuse and removal, rates and taxes, everything. Everything is going up, and in some cases, it's quite significant. Eskom, the national utility, pushes up their prices. That's what's happened there, and municipalities have to then compensate, and then they have two increases per year. And they have to make their profit on it as well. So it's the consumer suffers really, really badly. But yeah, running campaigns all around. Lucky they do open it up for public comments, so the public does participate again and can object and have their say and offer alternatives and so on and come up with a reasonable solution. But at the end of the day, Rick, I think that it's got to a point now where we're not getting the service, as you say, and it's across the board, across all municipalities. And there isn't one that can say they run 100% efficient and serve all the people that live in that area. And eventually, there's going to be some sort of rates boycott or something that's going to happen. And we've seen this happen in several smaller municipalities and towns where they move away, the public and the residents move away from the municipalities and seek other means to pay it, but and they don't pay their rates and taxes, which causes a total collapse and privatization.
And there's only so far, but it's like, you know, when you're screwing a screw into a piece of wood, there's only so far you can screw that thing before you start to wreck the head of the screw or the threads in the screw. And these proposals, alleged proposals here for flat fee every month plus an 18.84% hike, you know, wages, I'm pretty sure, aren't going up in South Africa by 18.84% in July to compensate just for the increase in cost of electricity, for example, let alone the cost of living that's going up right across the board. Somebody, a curious listener we have on here this morning, is asking a question to you, Rob. Max Bliss says, how much influence does the United Nations or the WEF have in South Africa? So there's a question for you. How much influence do the UN or the WEF have in South Africa, if any? And if they do, are people even aware of it?
They have major influence, major influence. In the same meeting that I was mentioned earlier on, that it was also brought up that most of South Africa's policy, if not all of South Africa's policies, is written by international bodies. And the UN plays a major, major part in that. Oddly enough, right down to city level, so even municipalities, also major metros, I should say, are influenced by the United Nations. They draft policies, and as you say, the public is majority of the public is completely unaware of it. And it's all based around sustainable development goals and Agenda 2030, and so on. And it's you look at the policies here and you think, hang on a second, they're not applicable to South African environment or this municipality environment, but they seem to be following a global trend. And it's exactly what it is local think tanks that the United Nations pushes the policy through. I think one of them is called ICLEI, I-C-L-E-I, which are actually based in Cape Town, and they have a significant influence on policy and how it's rolled out, all the way up to national level again, on major policies as well.
We're talking about people getting squeezed here. There's another thing that you put up on the Dear SA Twitter page, which you can find, by the way, at Dear SA _national. Insurance premiums in South Africa could soon include climate change risks. Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is this whole business we hear about lockstep now moving towards these sustainable goals. All countries are starting to fall in line. Over here at the minute in the UK and Ireland, insurance, people listening in from other parts of the world have been saying the same thing. Insurance premiums are going through the roof this year. Car insurance premiums, travel insurance premiums, home insurance premiums, commercial insurance premiums, they're all going up, and we're taxed on them too. So when we pay an insurance premium in a year, there's insurance premium tax on top of that as well. So in South Africa, a major South African insurance company, Santam, is working on a technology-driven tool that helps underwriters determine whether a property is at greater risk of climate change-related events. Well, again, here we go. Another tightening of the screw going on here. If it's not Eskom doing it, or you know, a tariff, a RAN tariff every month, and an increase in your electricity bill in July, here would come insurance renewal time. If you still get it, an email pops into your inbox or a nasty letter comes in the post and it says insurance on it, you can bet your ass it's not going to be a nice letter.
Yeah, it's when I read that, I was like, oh, yeah, it's insurance companies just cashing in on you know. I looked at it and I said, didn't they have a clause somewhere that used to say act of God? And I was like, well, isn't everything an act of God? And God seems to be replaced now with climate change. So it's an act of climate change, or it's a catastrophic event because of climate change. Right? How do you prove that? How do you prove it at all? And they refer to the recent floods in KZN and KwaZulu-Natal, and there were major mudslides, and quite a few billion rands worth of damage did occur there. But if you look at, you go back in history, it's nothing new. It's you know, that area is prone to flooding anyway. And it's what has really happened is the expansion of people moving into those areas, but it wasn't populated before. So there was no risk involved. But I think it's a cheap shot by insurance companies just to jump onto that bandwagon, which really it's, in the review, it says your neighbor can have a totally different tariff structure to you because your neighbor might be at a higher risk of climate change. Or how do you explain this? Well, how do you argue against it as well?
If you start trying to rationalize how insurance companies' brains work, you just say, follow the money. If there's more money in it for them, they're going to take it. We've only time for one more question for you. When are you leaving South Africa?
Oh, I don't know, Rick. That's a tough question. I don't think I will.
I think you're inching, you've inched your way out of the city. You've adopted a more rural approach. Yeah. The next step is you buy a one-way ticket, probably to Mexico or Hungary, I'm betting, or even Ireland, Rob. Would you not come over and live here with us and brighten our dispositions with your presence?
Absolutely, Rick. I'm moving right next door to you, if not into your bedroom.
Oh, no. Sorry, your spare bedroom. No chance of that. Maybe the garage. You can live in the garage, but fuck no, you can share my bedroom. No, absolutely no from that. And probably a big no from my wife as well. But anyway, on that inviting note and that very friendly note, I want to thank you so much, as always, for coming on this morning. It was a blast talking to you about what's going on down in South Africa, because it's important to keep an eye on that. Hope you have a great weekend, Rob. Of course, you and I will probably be exchanging music over the next few weeks, as we do. Hope you have a blinder of a weekend. Listen to some good vibes, watch some good movies, get some fresh air, and I'm going to do the same. I'll be back again on Monday, all being well, with more here on TNT, Today's News Talk.